Where are we here? I hope I looked up the right lesson. Whew. Amos 6. Amos 8. Which is it? Amos 6. We did Amos 8 last week, didn't we? Amos 6, 1 to 7. Hoy! This is generally translated woe. Woe! Woe, Nelly! What do you know about the book of Amos? Did you talk about this last week? I was out of town last week. I mean, you kind of know where we are. Early 8th century? Not real early. Kind of second quarter of the 8th century. Earthquake in the background. People contemplating the apocalypse now. Wondering if the day of the Lord is good or bad. I thought Nestigan's comment was good about how apocalyptic people don't do a lot of long-range planning. There's something fundamentally right about that in the way we do church, isn't it? I mean, not that one shouldn't have some planning and some vision, but boy, you can get all tangled up in what he described as Calvinism, that is, coming with a nice prepackaged agenda of how things are going to work out. Or just preaching law and gospel and get the heck out of the way. And if it goes off in this direction a little and it goes off in that direction a little bit, that's okay. And it sort of finds its way under God to accomplish what God wants it to do. And if somehow our plans get blurred or our neat little boxes get blurred or edges get bumped, that's okay sometimes. Now, Amos is predominantly law. That's always the problem with Amos. You're kind of hard-pressed to find gospel in these texts. And that's okay. I've never been a firm believer in the assumption that every text has law and gospel in it. If you read long enough, you can find law and gospel in every text, but sometimes you got to read to the end of the book. And that's kind of the case in Amos. There is no gospel in this text that I can find. Maybe we can uncover some in reflecting on it. So don't bring any in that's not there. That doesn't mean you don't preach the gospel, however, but it means you have to relate the text to a little bit bigger context. And Amos is pretty hard on the people of his time for good reason. Now remember, these are the people of God, after all. But they need to hear the law too, and understand what's... Well, let's see if we can figure out what's going on. Hoy, not hoy. There's hoy and there's oi. One with a hay and one with an olive. Of the two, the one with the olive is stronger. Oi is really woe. Hoy, usually translated woe, but at least in some occasions, can be translated in a positive sense. It's the same word you get in Isaiah, where is that, Isaiah 60-something, woe to the, come to the waters, those who are thirsty. Where is that, 55? Thank you, yeah. But that's hoy there, in a positive, it's certainly predominantly negative. I would translate this hoy, it's kind of an attention getter, it means look out, heads up, pay attention. Something of importance here that could be damaging to your health. Whatever this is, shananim, great. We don't know what this means. We don't know what the root is, and we don't know what it means either. Just, if you don't know what it is, I guess you wouldn't know what it means. In fact, it's a funny-looking root, right? It's got too many letters. A verbal root should have three. This seems to have four with two nuns at the end. Generally translated, those who are at ease in Zion... And that's a pretty good guess. By parallelism to the next line, those who trust in Har Shomron, in Mount Shomron, Mount Samaria. Now, a couple of things. I mean, if this is addressed to people who are essentially complacent in their faith, I guess would be the idea. The use of the article with the participle, these seem to be participial forms, is probably the vocative use of the article, which is common and perfectly legit. Oh, you who are at rest, at ease in Zion. Note also the parallel between Zion and Har Shomron, Zion and Mount Samaria. These are sort of the part for the whole of the north and the south, and includes both the north and the south. It's often cited, you know, that Amos really has as his focus the north. Well, you can't really worry about just the north without the south. So Zion is certainly part of the game here, and I always harbor the suspicion that these prophets really had a bigger concept of the one holy Catholic and apostolic church than just north and south. But they're addressing the whole people of God here. And understood in terms of its unity, not in terms of its disunity. Nikuve reshith ha-goyim. Nikuve is a kal passive participle in a plural construct state. How about that for a great can you parse it form? Nakav, nakuv, naku, nikuvim, nikuve construct. Now, nakav means to designate, point out. These are the distinguished guys. Did you ever think of when you say, boy, he's really a distinguished person, that distinguished really means that you can pick him out from the crowd, okay? Sort of head and shoulders above or whatever we use, but someone who would be a recognized guy. The recognized guys of the first of the nations, whoever these guys are, what do you think? These are sort of the big shots of the world, huh? Power brokers of the world, lifestyles of the rich and famous. Uba'u lahem Beit Yisrael, and they come to them, Beit Yisrael. Wow. How do you put this is a great verse for trying to figure out how to put the words together. Right? What does it mean? Is the lahem really the relative pronoun concept? They come to them, that is, the leaders of the rest of the world, to whom the house of Israel comes. That would work nicely. But what does this mean? Would this imply that the big shots in Israel are trying to play in the big leagues politically? And, you know, they're getting a little too swept up in, you know, world politics and kind of forgetting about tending to their knitting in the kingdom of God. Or is this talking about the distinguished of the nations coming to Zion or to Israel? They come to them, the them being Beit Yisrael. I don't know. This is one where you look it up in English translations and you'll find even in English they're all different. All right, nobody made up their mind on this one. You got a suggestion, Bill? It's ironic. Damn. Well, it could be. They sort of lying around thinking the... Well, I wonder. I don't know. I think that's a good possibility. Let me suggest... another possibility, only because it's creative, unique, and mine, and that is to read this as a broken construct chain, which involves some intricacies of Hebrew verse structure. That is to say that the nikuveh goes with the Beth Yisrael at the end. It's a chiasm, all right? These kinds of suggestions are generally intriguing and wrong, but for the sake of intriguing, it would read like this. The distinguished ones of the house of Israel, the first guys of the nations come to them. Or made into a relative clause, again addressing the guys who are at ease in Zion. You who are the distinguished ones of the house of Israel, to whom the reshith of the goyim come. Get it? Now what I find attractive about this, and I think it's picking up, Bill, what you were scratching around at, that it's the other nations coming to Zion, and these guys are just sort of lounging around waiting for the world to come to us to see what a great lifestyle we have. See? And I've got this sort of working hypothesis that the nations coming to Zion is a little bit bigger theme than just Isaiah 2. Remember that in the 8th century, they actually, this is kind of the Silver Age. I mean, David and Solomon, they were world players. But then the 9th century, kind of, they fell on hard times, civil war, blah, blah, blah. Syria rose. But here in the first half of the 8th century again, things are going pretty well. And I think it's very much an attitude, both in Israel and Judah, under Jeroboam II and then Uzziah in the south, that the kingdom of God can actually be a player on the world scene again. And this attitude would fit that very well, you see. Verse 2, I don't know, we got to go on. Ivru, crossover, imperative, crossover, kalne. Again, in poetry, you need words that aren't there. Prepositions, adverbs. Crossover, kalne, and ra'u, and see, imperative. And laku, go, misham, from there, to Hamath Rava, to Great Hamath. And Radu, from Yarad, go down, Gath Plishtim, to the way of Gath of Philistia, or the Plishtim, Gath of the Philistines. Major player type cities. This certainly isn't Nineveh, or the big time capitals. But hey, certainly lower end of the major leagues, right? Didn't make it in the playoffs, but still major league. Ha-tovim, no, not ha-tovim, read it right. Ha-tovim, min ha-mamlakoth ha-ela. Question mark, interrogative, got it. Good from the kingdoms, the these. Put that into Hebrew. That's good Hebrew idiom. Question mark. Good. The good here is modifying really what? You guys. Are you good from these kingdoms? Good from equals better than. Question mark. Better than these kingdoms? Imrav. If, it's sort of continuing the question, is great, their border from your gavul. Gavul means border. Is their border greater than your border? Comparing them to these nations. Of course, he's attacking them right where they're weak here. That they think they really are in the same league with all these guys, or that they have the same agenda. That is to say, a left-hand kingdom agenda instead of a right-hand kingdom agenda. I think that's the essential point here. Verse 3. Ha minadim layom ra, v'tagi shun shevet chamas. Oh, boy. Well, problems here in translation. First of all, the first form is, boy, anyone want to parse this? This is a moneyed form. Ha minadim. It's the article plus a PAL participle of a root with a missing root letter. Now, unfortunately, we don't know exactly what the missing rune letter is. It could be a third hey, nada. There's the nada that means to exclude or force somebody out of the community. There's a nadad, a geminate verb that means to flee, rush. There's a nud or node, hollow verb that means become homeless. And there's an Akkadian root, nadu, that means to predict or forecast. There you are. Those are the options. I actually looked this one up and found that as my help. Well, here's where poetic parallelism always helps. If you don't know, read the rest of the verse. Oh, you guys who do something to Ram, to Yom Ra, to the an evil day, and you who Nagash, who draw near to the, this is Shevet, probably from Yeshav, to sit or dwell, and means a seat, as in seat of power. Sometimes you'll find this translated even throne or kingdom or reign of Hamas violence. Well, if it's guys who are getting near to a place of violence, then you must have something about approaching in the first half of the verse, and generally your translations will favor that. You who approach or come near to an evil day, you, note the shift too from the vocative, which is really third person, the ones who, clearly to the second person in the imperfect tagishun, which is the point all along. It's really you guys we're talking about. You who come near to a throne or seat of violence. For, and again, here this is ironic, right? You know, they think everything is just hunky-dory, right? We're sitting, smoking our cigars, drinking brandy, you know, it's not just the world is going to hell and have us, but our own lives and our own people. Verse 4, Hashokavim, the ones who lying down upon mitoth shein. Mitoth is from, it's actually from the verb nata, that means to stretch out. So a mitoth is a stretching out place, usually translated bed, of shein. You'll see the word, the letter shin is originally from this shein, and looks like two teeth, a shin, all right? And the word shein means tooth, here it means ivory. Beds of ivory and guys who are sarakt, another kal passive participle. Sarak means to kind of, what you do in a beanbag chair, all right? You just kind of, yeah, you know, arms, so however you translate that, recline is a little too tame actually. Sprawl out, fall in a heap upon there, and our shoth is really a couch again, some kind of a reclining lounge. And eating, we got to go on here, but you get all the points here. This is just building up the image now. And okalim and eating karim mitzon. A karim is a young calf or bull or something like that. It could be a ram. I'm not sure if it's a cow or I think it's really a sheep, so it's a young sheep. Yeah, from the tzon, that would make sense. From the tzon, from the flock. And an egel is a calf. There we go. From the midst of the stall. Marbeik is the pen where you keep your calves. Now remember, this is a society that didn't eat meat but probably three times a year. And the reason you had calves was not to eat them. The reason you had sheep was not to eat them, but to milk them, at least the women, the females, and to get their wool. All right? And lush or luxuriant would be not even to eat them, but to eat a young one, because you're eating up your investment. So these guys have so many that they can throw a couple of young ones away and enjoy good veal, see? That's kind of the idea. That's why veal is sort of a delicacy. And the ones who parat, again, this means to doodle. upon the mouth of the harp. We'd call this, I don't know, what do you call this? Improv, diddle around. Could Dawid, like David, they consider for themselves vessels of song, okay? So, I mean, what's the point here? These guys got too much time on their hands, all right? They're essentially just dinking around, you know. My daughter does this all the time when she's, you know, the time you spend wasting time piddling around on the piano is in direct relation proportion to the amount of time you need to get your homework done, right? So, yeah, I mean, we can all identify with this stuff. These guys are just spending the whole day, you know, going to the club. Six, the ones who drink, shata, to drink. Ooh, we got to hustle, Jeff, I'm sorry. Right. The ones who drink from not just chalices of yayin, but a mizrek is a bowl, not ordinarily used for yayin. And the best, the top of the oil, they anoint. Mashat. They anoint themselves with the best, the reishith. But not, now look at the punchline, 6b. But not nechlu, nifal, perfect of kala. Kala means to be sick. In the nifal, it must mean something like to be sickened. But are not sickened, weakened. You know, really, it's not just sort of observing the problems, but it's being internally affected by them. Upon the shaver, here's another use. There's some great puns in here. We had shaveth, now we have shaver. This is from the verb shavar that means to break, smash, you know, snap. Upon the breakup of Yosef. Lakane, therefore, atah. Now, yiglu b'rosh golim. All right, you wanted to be either at the top of the nations or to have the roshith of the goyim come to you. All right, here's what's going to happen. You will go into exile as the rosh of the exiles. You want to be first? You got it. All right? You can lead the exile parade. Therefore, you will go into exile. Remember galah, to go into exile? At the top of the golim, the exiling ones, let's put another participle, and sar, now I'm not sure what the subject of sar is, and turn away from, and you will turn away, I don't know who the subject is, mirzach is a mourning house, a place where, and now they've got some archaeological evidence that there they actually were these places where people went sort of publicly to mourn. It wasn't just your house with a black flag in the window, okay? But they actually were these public mourning houses. But look at the mourning house of the Sarakking guys, and there's that same Sarak that we had in the passive participle, the guys who are flopped out in total leisure. I mean, what an oxymoron this is, see? A house of mourning for those who like to lie around and think about how good their life is. We got to quit. I'm sorry, Jeff.